What's going on, guys? I'm Cristiano Oliveira from the Benfica Podcast, and you're listening to the Celeste Zone Podcast.
Simões, bending one for Torres. Eusebio. Oh, my word! Have you ever seen anything like that?
Bem jogado por Simão. A passar por dois adversários, Simão. A tentar oferecer o gol a Figo. E...
And we welcome you to episode number 35 of the Celeste Zone Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again to our latest podcast as we are going to be previewing Nations League matchups, the match day three and match day four matchups in Nations League action as Portugal is looking to defend their Nations League title. Coming up on Sunday, they will be traveling to France to take on the defending World Cup champion, World Cup champions France. And then coming back on Tuesday the 13th, back home at Avalad to take on Sweden, which will close out the home and away matchup there between those two nations. So we'll also review the 0-0 friendly against Spain that took place just a few days ago at Avalad as well. Not a lot there to talk about, but just obviously wanted to give you guys a little bit of recap there. We'll go over the roster announcement. We'll go over the roster changes due to this pandemic. We'll go into a whole bunch of stuff, standings, upcoming matches, the friendlies for other nations or for the other teams in this group. A lot of information to get to you guys, and we can't wait to get it started here on episode number 35 of the Celeste Zone Podcast. On this episode, we do have a matchup against France. We do have a matchup against Sweden coming up in the next few days, but we will be focusing on the on that match against France. And to join us and talk to us about that is Jeremy Smith. He is a writer and podcaster. He is based in London, and he is a regular contributor to French Football Weekly and Get French Football News, both on their websites and their podcasts. So he will join us to talk about the upcoming matchup here against France, a rivalry that is obviously on our end went the right way 4 years ago, but obviously a rivalry that has been dominated by France over the years, but definitely a good one in terms of high quality from both national teams currently going on right now. So that we'll have that interview for you in just a few moments. But again, a reminder, as we always do, head to our website, CelesteZonePod.com. Like our page on Facebook. Share it with your friends. Facebook.com/CelesteZonePod. At CelesteZonePod on Twitter and on Instagram. You can always email the show, CelesteZonePod@gmail.com. Remember, if you are listening to us, go ahead and hit that subscribe button, whether you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere you are subscribing, any podcast platform that you are using, go ahead and subscribe to our podcast so you can never miss an episode of this wonderful program that I bring to you as often as I possibly can. And if there's any kind of rating system, we would gladly and humbly appreciate a wonderful rating on either of your platforms if those platforms give you that opportunity, you know. Apple Podcasts, give us that 5-star rating if you would be so kind. Leave us a nice little positive review. You guys have been so great at doing that, and the show has been growing a lot since national team play has come back. And we'll talk about that later on in the episode, but I'll say it here and I'll say it then. Just really appreciate the support as always. But we've seen some real growth in the podcast in terms of numbers of downloads and of followers, especially on Twitter, where we do the majority of our interactions with you guys, and we greatly appreciate that, and we'll get all into that a little later on. But yeah, let's go ahead and we'll first start with the roster announcement. The announcement took place, late last month, early part of October, something like that. But the squad is as follows: goalkeepers Anthony Lopes, Rui Patricio, and Rui Silva. Defenders João Cancelo, José Fonte, Mário Rui, Nelson Smith, Ruben Smith, Pep, Rafael Guerreiro, and Ruben Dias. The midfielders were Bruno Fernandes, Daniel Pereira, João Moutinho, Renato Santos, Ruben Neves, Sérgio Oliveira, and William Carvalho. And André Silva, Bernardo Silva, Cristiano Ronaldo, Diogo Jota, João Félix, Daniel Pedence, Rafa Silva, and Trincão. Were the forwards and wingers that were announced. A 26-man roster this go around for this call up. Obviously, a confined and very short window to play these matches, the friendly and the two Nations League matches. So they expanded it from 25 to 26. Goalkeeper wise, the same as it was in the previous call up. In terms of defenders, some news there. A couple of news items here. Ruben Smith, who was not available last call up due to COVID, and also trying to get his club football situation resolved. And he's still at Olympiacos as of this past transfer window that just closed. But he is back in. At the time, Domingos Duarte had lost his spot from the previous call-up. Domingos Duarte is now back on the roster as José Fonte has contracted COVID-19 in the last week or so. So he is not available. And then Mário Rui, he is also out COVID-19 related. He himself, as of this podcast, has not contracted it, but his club team, Napoli, in the Italian league in Serie A, they had themselves a bit of an outbreak. Both players and staff, I believe, multiple tests that came back positive. Their match against Cristiano Ronaldo and Juventus, that was postponed this past weekend, and it was postponed kind of late. They didn't have any official announcement until almost kickoff there, but Mário Rui, he is out. Coming in his spot is Nuno Skeira, a left back from Braga. He gets his first ever call-up, so congratulations to him. I believe 29, 30 years old, but he gets his first call-up there. And again, congratulations to him. Midfield-wise, André Gomes, he is out. William Carvalho, he returns to the Seleção. He's had a great start at Betis so far. He scored in back-to-back weekends. He had a cracker of a goal in his first match back. So glad to see the Velvet Tank back on the roster. And then on the forwards, you have Daniel Pedence. He is back in. Rafa Silva, he's back in. Gonçalo Guedes, he made way for both of those gentlemen to take their place or on the roster, I should say. So again, this is a top to bottom, just stacked roster talent wise for the Seleção, and we're definitely in a good spot for now and for the foreseeable future. That is for sure. As for the friendly against France, which took place on October the 7th, which was Wednesday of this past week, the starting 11 for the Seleção was as follows: Rui Patricio in goal, João Cancelo, Pep, Ruben Smith getting his first start and a first cap for Portugal, Pep and Ruben Smith at the center backs, Rafael Guerreiro starting at left back. You had Ruben Neves and João Moutinho and Renato Santos in the midfield. And then Cristiano Ronaldo Trincão getting his first start and second cap for the Seleção. They were joined by André Silva. In terms of the friendly, well, first off, the big thing for me, a couple of positives were this. There were fans in the stands, 2,500 fans just about. For the most part, I think socially distanced. I saw every time they panned to the fans, I would say a good 95% of them were wearing their masks. And if they weren't, they were either drinking something or eating something or just getting a quick word in edgewise where maybe the mask was muffling. But it was just nice to see the fans in the stands. It was so great to get a little bit more normalcy back into the world of football, the world of soccer. Obviously, bringing back the matches gives us a little bit of normalcy, but having some actual stands or having some actual fans in those stands was great. Was absolutely great to see. And then the other positive for me, right off the bat, how good did the green shorts and the red jersey look? My God, you don't know what you've missed until it's gone. And then when you get it back, you've missed it so much. It took me back, and I tweeted about this. It took me back to 2004. You know, it took me back to the Euros because it was such a classic look. And you know, say what you want about the polo look of the jersey, the lightning bolts on the side of the jersey, but that red top and those green shorts with the gold lettering and numerals, it's as good of a jersey and it's as good as of a look that you will see on any national team anywhere in the world. And I mentioned that it took me back to 2004, and the nostalgia came over me. And I tweeted out from the show account, and the nostalgia just took over me, and I tweeted out that it's Portugal, it's Spain, it's at the Alvalade, it was at the point when I tweeted it, it was still 0-0, and I'm like, is this gonna end with Nuno Gomes scoring the game winner? And I tagged Nuno Gomes in the tweet, and sure as hell, Nuno Gomes, a legend of the Seleção, he retweeted that tweet. And again, that might not be a big deal for some people. I was over the moon. It made my day that he retweeted that tweet. So Nuno Gomes, thank you very much. Muito obrigado. You made my day. And it was just cool to see, the show getting a little bit of love from an absolute legend in Portuguese football and of the Seleção. But as for the game, Portugal pretty much outplayed the first 25 minutes on their heels. The first 25 minutes, they were much better in the final 15-20 of the first half. In the second half, they hit the crossbar twice with Ronaldo doing it and Renato Sanches doing it. João Félix at the end almost poached one in off of a Ruben Smith header. To me, there wasn't much to take out of this friendly. The most important things for me in a friendly are these. If you have some young players, it gives them an opportunity to try to establish themselves in order to make Fernandes' decision to either play them or not play them a difficult one. I don't think, and we'll look at the starting lineup here, the starting 11. Francisco Trincão, he had his first start. He received his first start, his second cap overall. I thought he played well in the Croatia game, coming on late as a sub. He didn't do anything, in my opinion, to increase his stock, but I don't think he did anything to diminish it either in this friendly. I think the game overall was just meh, just kind of trying to get through it. You know, it would have been nice to get, one of those goals from Ronaldo or Renato Sanches or even João Félix at the end there, but it wasn't meant to be. The number one thing for me, no injuries. According to reports, all 26 players participated in training the following day, and heading into games that actually matter, coming up Sunday against France, and then Sweden 3 days later. You know, to me, that's the most important thing. And I think I mentioned it was October the 13th. It's October the 14th. October the 14th is the match against Sweden back at the Avalad. But, yeah, no injuries. You get a chance to see some, you know, it was an experimental starting 11. I do think one thing is, I don't know if it's certain, but I think it's a good indication that Rui Patrice probably gets his starting job back. I would guess that he would get a starting job back this Sunday against France. He was off a few weeks before on holiday prior to the Nations League matches last month. Anthony Lopes was in great form and had just participated in Champions League with Lyon. So I thought the decision there in retrospect was the correct one. But I think Rui Patrice is definitely the number one for the Selection and should be until Anthony Lopes absolutely outplays him. And we're not privy, obviously, to the training ground, but I thought it was a good indication that Rui Patrice being in the starting lineup, starting 11 today against Spain, I think is a good indication that he will be in the starting 11 against France. Again, 0-0, not much to take from it. Just a couple of notes from the game. Ronaldo made his 200th appearance for the Selection in either, you know, youth all the way to senior level. So I think he debuted as an under 15, according to the Federation, and all the way up the chain of different national teams. This marked the 200th appearance for CR7. So congratulations to him. Also, congratulations to Pep. He was capped for the 111th time, which is now most all-time for a defender, passing Fernand Kot. And if Pep plays the next two matches, the upcoming matches against France and Sweden, he will move from he just moved to the top five by breaking his tie with Fernand Kot. But if he plays these next two matches, he'll move into fourth place all by himself on the all-time caps appearance list for the Selection senior team. He would pass Nani for fourth at 112. So the two matches for Pep these coming Nations League matches, if he plays both against France and Sweden, put him at 113, passing Nani. Ruben Smith finally made his debut after a few call-ups with no caps as of yet. Got his debut, I believe played all 90 minutes. If I look at my notes, yeah, he played all 90 minutes and got his first start. Also getting their first start was Trincão, his second cap overall. The subs from this match, the starters played all 45 minutes. Ruben Dias replaced Pep. Bernard Silva replaced André Silva. And William Carvalho replaced Moutinho at the half. And then later on in the second half, Nelson Smith came on for Rafael Guerreiro. João Félix went in for Cristiano Ronaldo. And then Diogo Jota came in for, I believe, the last 10 minutes for Trincão. Again, not much to take from the game other than, as I mentioned, no injuries and just trying to experiment a little bit with maybe some formations or just trying to see what combinations may or may not work. I don't believe anybody did themselves any disservice in this friendly against Spain. Again, in a match like this, you're looking for someone to kind of step up and maybe take a position that may be up for grabs. I don't think there are any of those positions currently at the moment. I think the starting 11 is pretty set with maybe an exchange of maybe one, two positions max. But just getting out of this friendly without any injury, I think is the biggest positive there in terms of on the field, and of course off the field, just having the red and green and the fans in the stands is just a huge positive once again for all of us who support not only the Selection but football and soccer everywhere. So we'll take a break here, not a break, but we'll shift over to our interview here with Jeremy Smith, again a writer and a podcaster who's based in London, who is a regular contributor to French Football Weekly and Get French Football News. He was kind enough to join us and spend some time previewing the upcoming game at the Stade de France against the world champion French national team. And here is our interview with Jeremy right here on episode number 35 of the Slesson podcast. So we've taken a look back at the friendly and the roster that has been announced, and we're on the field for the 0-0 friendly against Spain, and now we look forward to Nations League matches, the away match to France and the home match 3 days later against Sweden. But we'll be focusing on the very big match against France on Sunday, and we are kind enough to be joined by Jeremy Smith. Jeremy Smith is based out of London, and we are, again, thrilled to have him on to preview the Portugal-France matchup. Jeremy, wonderful to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thanks. I think this is the last of something like 10 or 15 podcasts I've done in the last 10 days or so, mainly because of the transfer window. So I'm going to have a long rest after this one.
Well, we appreciate your time. We will make this as painless as possible, I promise you. So, thank you for your time. And we're looking forward to this matchup between these old rivals now. A little bit of a payback probably in the French mind from 2016. But let's start on the French side. And what did you make of the roster that was called up for these set of games? And what did you think of the 7-1 shellacking in the friendly between France and Ukraine on Wednesday?
I generally like the look of the squad. I think compared to the last couple, it's with a few players coming back from injury and back from, you know, positive COVID tests. People like Paul Pogba, who amazingly this is last night's appearance was actually his first for France for 16 months for various reasons. So there's still the sort of nutshell of the I guess the World Cup winning squad there, but also Deschamps is gradually bringing in a few youngsters. Camavinga is the obvious standout one, but Aouar made his debut yesterday as well. Mike Maignan, so he's doing what he did, I guess, also between 2016 and 2018, mainly keeping the squad that took France to the previous tournament, but just gradually kind of renewing it, making it a little bit younger bit by bit. And yeah, I like the look of it. And as for yesterday's match, it's difficult to draw many conclusions from it. I think it's one of those ones where, if it had been a narrow win, everyone would have been disappointed. And the fact that it's a big win, people are saying yes, but Ukraine were completely depleted because of COVID. I think they were down to their third goalkeeper. They had something like 14 players out. So I don't think there's too much to be read into it. But you, at the same time, you've got to just beat what's in front of you. And to score 7 goals in an international match, there was a nice variety of goals. There was a bit of history to a couple of them as well. A couple of really nice 1-2s for a couple of them. So I think all in all, it was a good performance and some positives to take out of it. But just with, you need to take a little bit of sort of restraint and appreciate what they were playing against.
We're talking with Jeremy Smith. You can follow Jeremy on Twitter at JeremySmith98. That's at JeremySmith98. He is featured on French Football Weekly and Get French Football News. And kind enough to join us to preview the Portugal-France matchup on Sunday. You're listening to episode number 35 of the Slesson podcast. I am your host, Danny Pinto. Jeremy, obviously the echelon and the history of French football, the national team, multiple time World Cup winner, multiple time Euro winner. How serious do you think does the French Federation take the Nations League, and do you see a different approach this go around than the previous inaugural version?
I don't really see a different approach because, like I said, I think Deschamps is quite a pragmatic coach, and he's not going to make any huge changes. I mean, you look at Germany, I don't think they've actually won a Nations League match yet. And I think they're using it, for example, much more to kind of experiment and blood a lot more young players into the squad. I think France are still treating it, they're not treating it as a major tournament. I don't think anyone is. And I think it's difficult for all nations, especially the top ones, to kind of appreciate or decide exactly how to treat it, because you don't want to. I mean, for me personally, I think it's a silly tournament, and I know a lot of people criticize friendlies, and I get the idea of trying to give everything a bit more competitive edge to give it more meaning. But I do think friendlies are important in order to give coaches the freedom to experiment with new formations and new players. So Deschamps, I think France probably falls somewhere in between, and the way Deschamps is playing it, I think, indicates that, with these new players coming in, with the fact that he is trying new formations. So during the last break, he was trying three at the back or five at the back. This one, he's gone back to a 4-4-2, but with a diamond rather than a straight 4-4-2. So he is trying different things, but he's not going overboard. I think he still wants the results, just to obviously maintain a feel-good factor. And I think that's how he treated the last one as well. I think the only difference with the last one was that it was straight off the back of France winning the World Cup. So I think, you know, a couple of players were maybe not exactly 100% focused, because they were sort of, I think there's a natural come down after winning the World Cup. And there are a few players whose form was affected the first year.
Jeremy, let's go back to the World Cup and then go even further back to 2016. Obviously,
if we
definitely will on my end. Obviously, they were one match away. France was from winning consecutive major tournaments, from winning at home in 2016 in the Euros, and then obviously conquering Croatia in the World Cup. But how much of what happened in 2016 do you think played a role in the motivation of the success that happened in 2018to lift France as world champions once again?
You kind of think, well, any top squad should be aspiring to win the tournament anyway, so it shouldn't make that much difference. But I think it did just give them that extra little edge, and I think the players would say that. And, you know, if you just take as an example, you know, you look on YouTube and you see Paul Pogba's pre-match pep talk before the final, and he talks about, you know, how much the final in 2016 hurt and how they don't want to go through it again. I think it was that gave them maybe just that little bit of edge. And even throughout the tournament, that they, I think it was only actually about 9 players that were in both squads, which is actually quite a big turnover. But what those players went through, firstly, that obviously they've got the experience of going far in a major tournament. So, you know, compared to maybe some of the other semi-finalists, for example, who it's all new to them, and maybe they're using a lot of emotional energy experiencing these things for the first time. France have already been there and done it a couple of years earlier, which maybe just gives them, you know, a little bit more sort of relaxation or whatever. And then also, yeah, the fact that they know how much it hurts and they don't want to go through that again. And so, you know, there's such fine margins at the very top of sport that maybe that extra tiny iota of motivation made a difference. And, you know, you look at the final and in 2018, and I don't think any French person would argue that for a lot of it, Croatia were the better team, but maybe it was just that will to win and that will not to experience again what they did in 2016 that carried them through.
We're talking with Jeremy Smith. He is a contributor on Get French Football News, and French Football Weekly, both on the websites and on their podcast. He is kind enough to join us for some time to preview the Portugal-France matchup in the Nations League. Both teams sitting at 6 points after the first 2 matches of group play. Obviously a very pivotal match coming up on Sunday in terms of control of the second half of group play. And we're talking about it here on episode number 35 of the Seleção podcast. Obviously 2016 was Portugal's first ever major tournament win. It came at the hands of France in France, kind of a replay of 2004 for Portugal, where they hosted and lost in the final to Greece. Being paired with Portugal, Jeremy, both in the Nations League and then in the upcoming Euros, what kind of sense does 2016 kind of still linger when it's, you know, you talked about it, how, you know, it was important for them to overcome that to win the World Cup. But in terms of actually Portugal directly, how much do you think that lingers, and how much of these matchups do you think has a little bit more extra incentive for the French Federation? Is payback on their mind?
I don't really think so. I think it's more probably something for journalists that they can sort of, grab a hold of and make it a story. But
for podcasters as well, probably.
Yeah, possibly. I think, you know, less so the Nations League, but certainly for the Euro qualifiers, obviously the most important. Oh, sorry, for the group, obviously the most important thing is to get through the group, and you know, I don't think that should be enough motivation as it is. I don't think France are going to, you know, say we need to beat Portugal to avenge 2016. They need to beat Portugal to get out of the group. And you know, you could even, if you wanted to, go back and say actually it's becoming quite a tasty rivalry in general, going all the way back to, you know, 84 and 2000 as well. It seems that France and Portugal often end up playing very important matches, particularly in the Euros. There was a World Cup semi-final as well, but mainly the Euros. So, you know, at this point in the sort of stage of international football, amongst the top teams, you're probably always going to find some kind of previous match to kind of hang on to and say this is revenge. But I don't think it is. You know, as I said, arguably that defeat to Portugal did France a favour 2 years later. So I think probably most players on both teams are over it. You know, I'm sure it still hurts that little bit, but I doubt that, you know, Griezmann will be thinking about that easy header that he missed in that final when he goes onto the pitch next week or next year.
Yeah, and a World Cup victory kind of eases that pain. When you say, Jeremy,
it's not a bad consolation.
You know, let's talk about Portugal here. What a much different team, talent wise, I think top to bottom, from the winners in 2016 to where we are now presently. What kind of problems do you think Portugal can pose to the French national team, and then what do you think were the issues that the French can exploit on this Portuguese national team?
I think you touched on it a little bit there. For me, I hope I'm not offending anyone, but a lot of the time I've seen Portugal in the past, I've always thought there's sort of, you know, 3, 4, 5 top class players and other players that maybe are not quite at that level and can be sort of got at or targeted or bypass the top players and I don't know, get a good matchup going against the weaker fullback or something, for example. Whereas now you look at the Portugal team and I think, you know, every player, not even just in the team, but in the squad, is a quality player who really are playing, you know, the top levels of club football as well. There's also a lot of players there now who've got experience of playing in France. Obviously now Danilo Pereira, that's another one who's just moved across. And important players like Moutinho and Bernardo Silva, for example, who obviously know French football very well. So I think that, you know, again, maybe it just sounds like sour grapes, but I think in 2016, part of the problem was that I think France sort of, in a way, they played their final against Germany in the semi-final. I think once they won that, they probably thought that the trophy was theirs. And then when Ronaldo went off injured, probably even more so, they kind of relaxed that little bit too much. And it, obviously, they paid the price for it. But I think now, you know, there can be no relaxation from the first minute. I think this is a really quality Portugal side from top to bottom. And, you know, yesterday, as an example, in the last World Cup, they've matched Spain, who a lot of people I think still think probably are the best footballing team in the world at the moment. They've matched them well. That's my concern for Portugal. I don't think it's not a case anymore of sort of nullify the threat of one or two players and then you'll be fine. The danger comes from all the way through the team.
Yeah, and to touch on something you had said right at the beginning of your answer, there's no offense taken here because I think us as fans and us who follow the team, we're recognizing that this is a very high quality group of players that we have not seen in Portugal for quite some time and honestly maybe ever. So there is an excitement, but there is also a sense of urgency to capitalize on, you know, winning another tournament like the Euro and you know, folks, you know, the Nations League is what it is. I, you know, as a fan of Portugal, I'm very proud that they won the first Nations League tournament at that time. We still didn't know really what to make of it, and to a certain extent, we really don't know what to make of it now. Although it is taken more seriously, they've opened up the groups to from three teams to four teams, making more matches and just giving more competitive football to the fans, which is always good. But I think there is a sense of urgency and excitement all at once because you just don't know when you're going to have opportunities like this again. And when you have the high quality that Portugal currently does have now, you know, matchups against, you know, Spain, even though it was a friendly, are exciting. To see where we stack up. The upcoming matches against France in both the Nations League and in the Euros next year. It's a good litmus test to see where they are in the world of football. FIFA rankings be damned. If those don't mean anything unless you match up. And right now they are in a good spot, I think, to at least compete and. You know, hopefully, you know, from my point of view, hopefully persevere and get through to another Nations League knockout and go far and hopefully defend the European Championship. So, you know, that's the point of view I'm coming from on the Portugal end. What does from your point of view, what are the problems that the French can give this current roster that the Portuguese are putting out?
The thing is, with France, you know pretty much what you're going to get. So you know that there's going to be a generally solid defence. France have really got an embarrassment of riches at centre-back. But, you know, the likelihood is that if they're playing four at the back, it will be Varane and maybe probably Longley, maybe Kimpembe. But, you know, two quality centre-backs there. For me, Varane was the player of the last World Cup and should have won. The Golden Boot or whatever, the Ballon d'Or that year, but I think he was robbed. And then you're going to have a strong, solid midfield, but the main danger, obviously, is the attack and whichever combination it is. If Griezmann is at the top of his game, which obviously for a lot of the last year or so he hasn't been in club football, but he does generally manage to raise his game for international matches. And with Mbappe, as long as he's fit, and you know the two of them came on last night, and Mbappe set up one goal brilliantly, scored another really good one, really looked bright and full of running. Then you've got Giroud as the foil, as the kind of pivot who provides a completely different danger to the other two, and the three of them combine so well together that if they're fit and firing, then obviously that's where the danger comes from, because you're sort of being hit by one striker who's kind of going to keep you distracted physically and in the air, another one who's just full of explosivity and tricks and, you know, can pop up anywhere. And then you've got Griezmann, who for me is one of the most intelligent players in the world, dropping deep, finding space, finding his partners with clever passes and one-touch football. And I think, you know, as long as the three of them are on form, they're very, very difficult to defend against.
Yeah, they are a formidable squad. That is, they're the defending world champions, for goodness sakes. France has got an enormous amount of talent and embarrassment of riches, as you said, in all parts of in all parts of the field. So it's a matchup that we are definitely looking forward to. And again, it's a good test for where this this national team from Portugal is currently at. We are speaking with Jeremy Smith. He is a contributor from on French Football Weekly and Get French Football News on their podcasts and on their websites. You can follow Jeremy on Twitter at JeremySmith98. That's JeremySmith and the number 98. So JeremySmith98 on Twitter. Jeremy, before we let you go, and I really appreciate your time and us hooking up here to preview the matchup here. Obviously, you are obviously looking at French football, not only on the national side, but club side as well. And during the pandemic, the French league, Ligue 1, was one of the few leagues that did not come back in Europe following the break. I believe the Netherlands was also among the bigger leagues to not come back. In retrospect, do you think that was the correct decision by the league to finish the season as it was at the break? And what kind of ramifications have you seen, if any, from that decision, from suspending the rest of the season due to the COVID outbreak?
From a purely footballing perspective, I think there were some injustices there. So PSG were definitely going to win the league, and Toulouse were definitely going to get relegated. But for example, Lille probably would have beaten Rennes to third place if the season had continued. Amiens might not have been relegated if the season had gone to its end. So I feel sorry for them. In terms of the rest of it, I think it was the right decision to make at the time, but I don't think the decision needed to have been made then. And I think France rushed into it. And there are some people who are saying, look, there's, you know, all the way through, there were people contracting COVID. Even, you know, when the season started again in the Premier League, there were people getting COVID. It wasn't worth any kind of risk. And I see that point. On the other hand, the fact that a lot of these leagues did come back and generally finished their seasons without too much hassle suggests that possibly France could have done that as well. I think that there's a couple of issues in France. I think firstly, there was a lot of sort of politicking between the government and the league and everyone blaming each other. And even within the league, there's so many sort of different councils and committees and heads of the league. And then the French Football Federation getting involved when they shouldn't have done. And the whole thing was a mess. And so I think a lot of it was point scoring. So my concern is whether it was done for the right reasons. And the other thing, which I think is important, I think the Premier League rushed back because of TV rights, because, you know, so much money comes into the clubs from TV that they really wanted to get those matches back and shown on TV to get that money coming in. I think in France, if anything, it was a little bit the other way around, because they were coming to the end of some TV contracts with new ones due to start this season. So I think conversely, it was convenient for France to end the season, have a clean break, and then focus on the new season. And I guess also you could say that maybe PSG and Lyon's good runs in the Champions League, possibly they reap the benefits of having a bit of a rest. But the TV thing, funny enough, is arguably coming back to bite France, because only yesterday and today it's come out that the new TV rights holders are struggling to meet their payment installments, and they're trying to get an extension or trying to get a reduction on the amount that they stand to have to pay to the league. And if they get their way, or if they simply can't pay, then the league is in serious danger of going bankrupt. And, you know, the French clubs are not like the Premier League clubs that have, you know, been benefiting from this massive TV money for years. They need the money. Even PSG and Monaco and Lyon have had to sort of tighten purse strings this summer because of the money they've lost in gate receipts and in TV money. So everything is a lot more on a knife edge in France. So I understand some reasons for why the season ended. I agree with some of the reasons. I'm uncomfortable with some of the other reasons. But my main concern at the moment is that as long as the COVID crisis continues, even if the season continues, there could still be huge ramifications for French teams. And that's a real worry.
Yeah, that would be unfortunate if it got to a much graver situation than it currently is now. Speaking of money, and we'll finish with this, how much of the transfer market in the French league was impacted by the current state of the league and the COVID crisis?
There was definitely a lot less transfer activity than usual. In terms of interaction with the Premier League, which is where the money usually comes from, there were still, you know, three or four very big deals. But I mean, I can just give an example of my club, which maybe kind of is a good illustration of where we're at. But my club in France is Metz, and they had a striker who, you know, had a very good season last year, and they basically built their transfer policy this summer on the basis that he would be sold to a Premier League club for around 12 to 15 million euros. And in the event, the offer just didn't come in. So they had to sell him in the end for 10 million to Strasbourg. And it puts them in a difficult position. It's caused really bad PR, for what it's worth, as well. And in any other summer, I think they would easily have sold him for about 15 million. There generally seems to be so many city Premier League clubs willing to throw a stupid amount of money at any player that's had a half decent season. This year, they're not doing that. Even if you take the example of Houssem Aouar and Memphis Depay, the offers didn't come in for them. You know, Aouar, only Arsenal made an offer when people were expecting Man City or Juventus or Barcelona to come in. The clubs just don't have the money this year, or at least they don't have the confidence to spend the money because they don't know what's going to happen. So, yeah, I think France has been affected as much as anywhere else, but because it's such a selling league, maybe it's been affected that little bit more because the money that they would expect to come in didn't quite come in the same way that it would have done the last couple of summers.
Well, Jeremy, I can't thank you enough for your insight on both the national team and the goings on in Ligue 1, especially after the pandemic. But great to have you on. Great to have share some time with you here and talking with you as we prepare for Portugal versus France in the Nations League. And give Jeremy Smith a follow here on Twitter at JeremySmith98. Once again, that's at JeremySmith98. Let him know that you heard him on the Celeston podcast and that he did a great job of previewing us for the big match on Sunday between Portugal and France. Jeremy, again, thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, we have some matches still ahead of us between both our national teams and that we cover. And maybe we'll get together again, either as soon as next month or for sure next summer, previewing the Euros. But great to have you on, and thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks a lot for having me, and I'll give you next week if you give us next year.
You know what? I cannot promise you that at all. We have to somehow make sure that we validate what happened 4 years ago. So if it comes at the behest of France again, so be it.
We'll see.
All right, Jeremy, thank you so much, and be safe, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great, thanks a lot.
And our thanks once again to Jeremy Smith. Make sure you guys give him a follow and let him know what a great job he did on this episode in previewing the matchup against France. Again, his Twitter is at JeremySmith98. That's JeremySmith 98 on Twitter. Jeremy, just a great time talking to you about the upcoming matchup. And who knows, if things go a certain way and maybe after these next four games, Portugal and France are tied heading into the last two matches of group play, we might have Jeremy back on to preview that as well. But at the very least, we'll have him on at some point, because, man, Portugal and France are going to be seeing themselves, a lot of themselves, in the next 12 months here. So, again, my thanks to him for his appearance on episode number 35 of the Celeston podcast. All right, as we head into match day 3 and match day 4 of the Nations League. Here is where we stand in terms of the standings. Portugal, by way of goal differential, is on top. Two wins out of two matches played, six goals scored, one goal against, a positive goal difference of five. France, two wins, five goals scored, two goals scored against, a positive goal differential of three. Sweden and Croatia, they are third and fourth, respectively. Sweden with a negative three goal differential, Croatia with a negative five. Both of those nations looking for their first wins, first points of Group 3 play in League A of the Nations League. And it will be guaranteed, I should say, that either 3 points or 1 point will be shared between Croatia and Sweden. As we look towards the schedule for the coming matches of Match Day 3 and Match Day 4, Croatia, they host Sweden on October the 11th, this coming Sunday. France, of course, hosts Portugal at the Stade de France on Sunday as well. And then 3 days later, Croatia will be hosting France on the 14th, and then Portugal comes back to host Sweden at the Avalade. You know, the importance of the France match is obvious, but and obviously I don't mean to diminish the Sweden game by not having someone to talk about the Sweden matchup, but the Sweden match is just as important for a number of reasons. Okay, let's say that Portugal loses in France, which is a possibility and a very real one. You know, they have to give themselves an opportunity on match day five, when France comes to Portugal, to get back even on points with France if France gets a win at Croatia. So at the end of match day four, if France is sitting on 12 points off of four wins and Portugal gets that win against Sweden following a hypothetical loss against France, they're sitting at 9 points, 3 points behind. If Portugal beats France on match day five, then it's all to play for in the final match day six when Portugal goes to Croatia and France hosts Sweden. Obviously, goal differential will be the main thing there, as they will split the first two games, their two matchups. So although it's very important and it's the marquee matchup of the weekend, France versus Portugal, make no mistake that Portugal-Sweden game on match day four back in Lisbon is very important to the Seleção's chances of getting out of this Nations League group. So yeah, it's the glitz and the glamour of France, and it's hard not to get lost in the glitz and the glamour of France. Is Jeremy mentioned it, the embarrassment of riches that this team and this roster has, from goalkeeper to defender to midfield to forward. You look at Hugo Lloris, who is their captain and plying his trade at Tottenham. You have Varane, you have Pavard, you have Kimpembe, you have Mendy on the defense. Pogba and Kante and Oar in the midfield. You have Mbappe and Griezmann and Giroud and Martial at the wings and at the forwards. It's, you know, we're stacked. Make no mistake, they are just as stacked, if not more. And it's just so important that if we don't get them in France, we get Sweden at home and we give ourselves an opportunity for payback on match day five next month in Nations League group play. So again, all to play for in all these matches. And it's just, again, this is what this Nation League was made for. Jeremy's not a huge fan of the Nations League. I get that as someone who has seen their national team win multiple World Cups and Euros. I get that. And the majority of us here, we've tasted victory these last 4 years, in 2016 in this inaugural tournament in 2019, and I'll take it. But we want more, and we absolutely want more. And this Nations League tournament has, to me, given just more competitive and more meaningful matches on a national team level. That is just, I think, one, great for soccer fans and football fans everywhere, but it's great for the federations. It's good to have more opportunity to put more trophies and more accomplishments on the mantelpiece and in the trophy room. It's to me a no brainer, and it's been a huge positive. That's for sure. Okay, some other news in terms of UEFA and FIFA. Let's first go to the FIFA rankings. So the latest FIFA rankings came out, I believe, after the matches that Portugal won over Croatia and Sweden. Portugal moved from 7th to 5th in the world, and they moved from 5th to 4th in UEFA. So Portugal up to 5th in the world. In the world rankings, UEFA announced late in September that it will allow up to 5 substitutions to be made by all teams in European club and international matches for the rest of this season. The decision was announced following UEFA's executive committee meeting in Budapest. It applies to the Champions League, the Europa League, the Women's Champions League, as well as the remainder of the Nations League. So that was not, you know, the 5 substitution rule was not in effect for the first 2 matches against Croatia and Sweden. They will be in effect for the rest of the Nations League matches. So that'll be interesting to see. Again, Portugal and France, super deep. This is definitely a benefit to them. In this group, having the most talented rosters in this 4-team group, there has not been a decision yet on if they're going to keep the 5 subs for Euro 2020 or Euro 2020, whatever they're calling it, the Euros next summer. We'll just call it that. But there has not been a decision yet on if they're going to be 5 subs at the Euros next summer. UEFA also announced that the finals of the Nations League will be played in October, October 6th through the 10th. So the semis and the finals will be between the 6th and the 10th of October of 2021. And the 3 nations that have expressed interest in hosting the semifinals and finals are Italy, the Netherlands, and Poland. Obviously, Portugal last summer hosted and won at home the inaugural Nations League, and they are not in the mix this go-around as of right now. What they are in the mix for, which was announced during the friendly against Spain this past Wednesday, is that the Spanish Federation is joining with the Portuguese Federation in a joint bid for the 2030 World Cup. And ladies and gentlemen, that is huge news if you're a fan of the Selecao. And let me tell you why. I think I mentioned this, and I don't recall if it was in the last episode with Tom Cundert or even when we talked with Alex Gonsalves, but I know that I mentioned it in the last few episodes. The manner in which Portugal has stepped up for UEFA as a host nation, albeit small, in the last 12 months for the Champions League and for the Nations League, as well as the absolute success that was the 2004 Euro, I think it's a no-brainer that Portugal throws their hat into the ring for this World Cup bid. I think it's smart to include Spain, just because obviously Spain has that pedigree of hosting a tournament before, and the stadiums are there in both countries, and the fervor of football, the fervor of soccer is there between these countries. It's a wonderful partnership, I think, that can be an absolute smashing success, and I hope that FIFA, in my honest opinion, I hope that FIFA rectifies the mistake they made of 2018 and in giving Russia the 2018 World Cup instead of the joint bid for Portugal and Spain. The 2018 World Cup was, albeit a successful one by everyone's account, but and I'm biased, obviously, here, but to me, it's a no-brainer off the success of 2004 and, you know, what Portugal has done for UEFA in the, especially with the pandemic this year, by hosting those Champions League games and the success that was the Nations League hosting in Porto and Guimarães in 2019. I think this is a perfect fit and a perfect bid for 2030. And I mentioned this on Twitter as someone who lives in North America, someone who lives in the States, and this podcast, in looking at our demographics, about 80% of our listening audience is based in the United States and in Canada. The 2026 World Cup is going to be played in the United States. It's a I don't know if you call it a joint bid or a tri bid, but awarded, whatever it is, a trio of countries in North America, the three countries in North America, the United States, Canada, and Mexico, will be hosting the 2026 World Cup. And as someone who is a Luso American, a Portuguese American, for all you Canadians who are Luso Canadians, Portuguese Canadians, to have the World Cup in 2026 on North American soil, and to follow that up with a World Cup in the motherland, that would be unbelievable. And I hope and pray that it happens. I have not read when they expect to make the announcement. I will try to get that for you before we get out of here. But yeah, I just think it's an absolute no-brainer for the Federation, the Portuguese Federation, to join forces with the Spanish Federation and get this bid for 2030. So, again, let me go back to the Nations League real quick. All four teams in our group, including Portugal, obviously had some friendlies leading up to the Nations League match day 3 and match day 4. Obviously, Portugal 0-0 against Spain. France just demolished a depleted Ukraine 7-1. Croatia got an away win at Switzerland, beating the Swiss 2-1. And Sweden also got an away win at Russia. They also won by a margin of 2-1. The matches, again, upcoming for the Nations League are as follows. Portugal on Sunday against, they travel to France. Croatia hosts Croatia hosts Sweden on Sunday. And then on the 14th, it's Croatia hosting France and then Portugal hosting Sweden. As for the under 21s, they are also in action, and I want to give them some love because obviously as stacked as we are on the senior level, the under 21s are also very stacked, and they will be in action as of this podcast. They take on Norway. We are releasing this episode on October the 9th. They take on Norway at home in Estoril. They take on Norway on October the 9th, and then they will travel to Gibraltar on the 13th for a match at Victoria Stadium in Gibraltar. Currently, as of this podcast, before the match against Norway, Portugal sit second in their group for qualification for the under 21 European Championships. The Netherlands are currently 7-7. They have 21 points after 7 matches. They sit atop group, I believe it's group 7. Portugal, if the qualifying ended today, they would make the tournament as among one of the 5 best runner-ups. They have played 5 matches so far, 4 wins and 1 loss. That loss, obviously, to the Netherlands. But they have 2 games in hand, but they are 9 points behind the Netherlands. But yeah, October the 9th, as of this, the day that this podcast comes out, they take on Norway and then they travel to Gibraltar. Gibraltar, who have 7 losses, have no goals scored for them, and have suffered 34 goals. Portugal beat Gibraltar the first go around September of last year 4-0. I would expect much of the same in that matchup in Gibraltar this go around. Finally, just a couple of show notes here to end the episode. I mentioned before that we've gotten a lot of growth. We've had a lot of growth, I should say, since the national team came back. One of those, I interact mostly with you guys on Twitter, You know, a little bit on Facebook, a little bit on Instagram. Mostly the Instagram is just, obviously everyone knows. I was about to say the Instagram is just for pictures, and obviously everybody knows that, Danny. Come on. But not a lot of interaction there. A little bit more interaction on Facebook. But our bread and butter in terms of connecting with you guys is Twitter. And we just reached the 700 follower mark the last couple of days. That might not be a big number to most people. That's a huge number to me. It's just one. It shows the continued growth of the podcast, and just having people continue to support and continue to this podcast continues to reach more and more people. I'm very appreciative of that. It truly is very humbling, and I really, really, from the bottom of my heart, thank each and every one of you who, either from the beginning or if you're just coming on now, have listened, have interacted, have played any kind of part in the success and the growth of this podcast. And the second part is that these last two episodes are the most downloads we have ever had in back-to-back episodes. These are already top five all-time episodes in terms of our downloads. But in terms of back-to-back episodes, we've never had these many downloads, back-to-back. So, again, I thank you guys from the bottom of my heart, and thank you guys so much for all the support and all the listening and all the subscribing and the reviews and, just humoring me for the last almost 2.5 years now. But this is more fun than it is the previous episode, and it continues to be more fun, and just the interaction and just again seeing the Slesson back on the field, I think is a big time reason for that as well. We will have a couple of more episodes in the next coming days. Obviously, we'll be recapping the matches against France and Sweden. But before that, we'll also have what is to me becoming a somewhat of a tradition. And for an episode for a podcast that is only 2.5 years old, we don't have much tradition. But we'll be joined by Sean Gillen of Portugal.net to cover the transfer window, the summer transfer window. That involved Portuguese players, primarily the players plying their trade for the Slesson or on the fringe of being on the team, or maybe even some of the under 21, even younger players such as Fabio Silva's huge move to Wolverhampton. But we'll obviously talk about Ruben Dias and Diogo Jota. Those were the two biggest in terms of money deals. For Slesson players, Nelson Smith also moving to Wolverhampton, but we'll talk about the transfer window and how it impacted the Slesson and other Portuguese players with Sean Gillen. That will be on our next episode. I'm hoping that episode comes down on Sunday, the day of the Portugal France match, and then the Nations League recap should be coming out sometime next week. Either Thursday or Friday, the 14th or 15th, I believe are those dates. Let me check to see. The 15th or 16th, I apologize. The game is on the 14th. I hope to have a recap of both matches on the 15th or the 16th, and then a summer transfer window recap this coming Sunday, the 11th. So a lot of information, a lot of info on this episode, and a lot more coming for you guys in the next coming days. And obviously thank you guys for all that. Again, my thanks to Jeremy Smith for previewing the Nations League matchup coming up between France and our beloved Slesson. Again, follow him on Twitter at JeremySmith98. Remember to hit up our website, SlessonPod.com, Facebook.com/SlessonPod, at SlessonPod on Twitter and on Instagram, and email us SlessonPod@gmail.com. My name is Danny Pinto. I have been your host of episode number 35 of the Slesson Podcast, a proud partner of Portugal.net. Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again, and Forza Portugal!